serious shortcoming of spin from quantum gravity is the absence of fermions. So here I present the work in collaboration with Mucinan, Claudio Verini, Carlo Rovelli, and Wolfgang Wieland, in which we propose a tentative minimal coupling of the spin form quantum gravity with fermions and Young-Mills fields. We find that the coupling is firstly simple in the spin form framework, and the amplitude is simply the generalization of gravitational amplitude to spin network with spin one-half open ends at nodes. And in presence of fermions, it's also easy to add the Young-Mills fields, promoting a global symmetry to a local symmetry. And the dynamics can be generated a la Zeldovich from fermion loops. So this is the plan of the talk. So first, I briefly review some basic ideas of loop quantum gravity and spin forms. Then I'll describe the discretization of spin form fields on a two complex. First, in a more standard, in a standard way, as a lattice gauge theory. And second, I recast the action in a form that is useful to be coupled with spin form quantum gravity. At this point, we are ready for the coupling. We will see the partition function of the theory of spin forms plus fermions, and I'll explain our proposal. But in order to write this partition function in a local form that is as a product of vertex amplitudes, it's useful to describe the fermion state, so the Fock space for fermions. And so I'll explain another version of the formula of the partition amplitude that is easier. And finally, I'll briefly mention the coupling with Young-Mills fields and the conclusion and outlooks. Let's briefly review the kinematics of loop quantum gravity. Loop quantum gravity is a quantization of general relativity based on the conjugate variables that are densitized triads and Ashtagard-Barbero connection. An abstract graph is defined by a set of L-oriented links and set of N-nodes. The Hilbert space on which the theory is defined decomposes into a direct sum of Hilbert spaces associated to abstract graph. So the total Hilbert space does not depend on the lattice. The Hilbert space associated to a single graph is constituted by a square integrable function of L group elements, one for each link, gauge invariant at nodes. This looks like quantum lattice Young-Mills. The elements of the Hilbert space associated to a graph are explicitly a gauge invariant wave function of the Ashtagard-Barbero holonomy along the links of the graph. So the holonomy is H, and here we denote with G source and G target the gauge transformation at the source and target node of the link L. An orthonormal basis which diagonalizes the geometric operators for area and volume is given by spin networks. They are labeled by spins on the link and the intertwiners quantum number associated to the nodes, like in this picture. And the J are area quantum numbers. In fact, the spin network are eigenstates of the area operator, and this is the eigenvalue. And the intertwiners are volume quantum numbers. So the physical picture is the following. That is the spin J measure the area of the surface cutted by the link. And the intertwiner quantum number is the volume associated with a chunk of space around the node of the graph. So the dynamics is given of the quantum gravity is given by the Hamiltonian constraint. But in order to avoid the difficulties of the quantization of this constraint, we use another approach, that is the covariant formulation of spin forms. So the dynamics is given by spin foam that is too complex. It is a collection of vertices here in blue, edges, these tiny lines, faces in pink, and can be thought as the evolution of spin network with branching at the vertices. So these are a boundary spin network that evolves through a spin foam. So explicitly, a node evolves through an edge and branches at the nodes. And the links of the boundary spin network bounds the face of the foam. So the transition amplitude for the boundary spin network is given in a local form as a product of face amplitude, edge amplitude, and vertex amplitude. A spin foam formalism provides a sort of final rules for the vertices and propagators of the two complex, or in other words, is a Mismerocki gives a sort of Mismerocki path integral over virtual geometries interpolating external spins and intertwiners. So in this slide, I briefly review how spin foam models are derived. But really, really briefly. So the spin foams are tensor equivalent quantization of general relativity based on Holst action. This is the first part is the usual Einstein-Hilbert-Palladini action in terms of triads, E, and connection, omega. And the second part is called a Holst term. It's a topological term that vanishes on shell. So it doesn't affect the classical dynamics, but it is useful in order to write a theory in terms of a Nash-Barbero connection. And gamma is a real number, and it's called an immersive parameter. So spin foams are obtained starting from VF theory. That is a theory that has this action. Here the basic variables are a true form, B, and the connection, omega, and F is the curvature of the connection. The equation of motion imposes the flatness of the connection. So this theory has no local degrees of freedom, but we can turn this topological theory into general relativity by imposing simplicity constraints. That means imposing a metricity condition on the B field, in order to turn the action of BF theory into Holst action. So we can discretize this variable, so the B field and the connection, on a two complex. It is a generalization of, in this particular case, we use a triangulation. So this is a piece of a two complex. So, and can be thought as the dual of a cellular decomposition of space-time. So the vertices are dual to four cells that for a triangulation are four simplices. The edges are dual to three cells that in the case of triangulation are tetrahedra. And the faces of the foam are dual to the two cells that are triangles. The faces are oriented and bounded by the edges. And the edges are bounded by vertices, so the source vertex and the target vertex. So we can regularize the basic, the fundamental variable VF on this complex. So the connection is regularized by an holonomy along the edges. And we can split this variable in two parts, so one source holonomy and one target holonomy. And the B field is regularized on the face of the foam that is dual to the triangle. And so it is defined as a smearing of the B field on a triangle. And now on these variables, we can impose the simplicity constraints. So here I just mentioned the constraints, but they are not important for what for the presentation that follows. So anyway, it's useful to write the B-field in terms of self-dual and anti-self-dual part. And what the simplicity constraint says is a relation between the modulus of the self-dual and self-dual part and this direction n. So this is a form of the simplicity constraint that we have to impose on this variable. And we can impose this constraint directly at the quantum level. So now let's pass the fermions on a two complex.
You talked about abstract graphs, but in a second you were embedded in the manifold. Does it matter which? Are you doing embedded or unembedded, and does it matter for the
fermions? No, we use embedded graph, but okay, here it doesn't matter. Okay. So this is the, first we start in the Euclidean case, and then we rotate to the Lorentzian case later on. So this is the Dirac action. We are interested in chiral spinors. They have two complex components. So if we project the Dirac action on one of the two elicity components, we obtain this action. So where sigma are Pauli matrices. So first, fix a coordinate system and discretize spacetime by chopping it into a union of four cells that we call V. Then consider the dual complex and approximate the field by its value on each vertex of the complex. And then discretize the derivative on each edge in this way. So the action can be discretized as a sum over four cells of an action for one four cell. And the action for one cell is this one. So case V is the volume of the four cell. L is the length of the edge. U is the unit vector parallel to E, and we indicate with this modulus of V the number of edges bounded by V, that is the valence of the vertex. We include the factor 4 over the valence to take into account the fact that multiple edges can overcount the derivative, and these terms in blue cancels when we add the complex conjugate. So this is standard way of discretize a fermion field on a lattice. But now we want to recast this action in a form that is more useful for decoupling with spin forms. So consider a three cell, to E, that is dual to E, and imagine, for example, that is that E is perpendicular to the three cell, like in the Voronoi cellular decomposition. Now, the four-dimensional cell V can be partitioned into the union of V pyramids with base tau and H, that is L half. And the volume of each pyramid is this one, where small V is the tree volume of the three cell. Now we want to pass from vertex variable to edge variable. So there is a physical reason to pass from the vertex variable to the edge variables. And the physical reason is that in the canonical framework, we want that the fermion field lives on the nodes of the boundary graph. So since the nodes are evolves through the edges, we want a fermion variable that has an edge label and not a vertex label. So we want to pass from the vertex label for the field to the edge label. So this can be done, and this is our proposal. This proposal follows intuitively from the previous one in the regular case, because in the simply, we pass the volume, the four-dimensional volume, into the sum, and we substitute the formula of the volume with this one and cancel the length of the edge that was here with the h that is in the volume. So it follows intuitively, but can be generalized also in the case of non-regular decomposition. Here, sigma e is the matrix, is the Pauli matrix in the direction of the edge e, that is defined in this way. And the psi e is the fermion field computed in the point of intersection between the edge and the trisel, tau. And it is defined as the average of the field on the source vertex and the one in the target vertex. And this approximation can be done if the second derivative of the field can be neglected. So now we want to consider a partition function for the quantum fermion field, fermionic fermion field, and this is given by Bergson integral, where here we have chosen this measure, and this measure relies the scalar product at each edge seen as the bonding between two force cells. Psi are interpreted as anti-commuting variables, and this volume factor in the exponential is needed for dimensional reason and also to keep into account the fact that the classical theory, the scalar product, is this one. So recall that the only non-vanishing Bergson integral is this one. So we can expand the vertex action in Taylor series, so we will have these terms. And the series stops because there can be at most four fermions.
Yeah? So this is a spin form. So you,
we are still not in spin form. We are still for the moment we don't have spin form. We will travel to spin form later. So for the moment it's just discretization of two complexes.
But the space-time complex.
Yes.
So you associate a fermion, a spinner fermion with each edge.
Yes.
Of the two complexes.
Yes. The label is the label of the IFA. The label is the edge U1.
Good. And where do these volume factors come from?
Where the
volume is associated with each node dual to a tetrahedron. I'm sorry, with each edge is dual.
It's associated, the edge, here we are in four dimension.
So the edge is associated to a tetrahedron.
Is associated to a tetrahedron, and the vertex is associated to a four simplex. Okay. This is in the bulk. Then in the boundary, because we won't have the, at the end, we won't have the canonical inverse space on the boundary of the fermions plus the quantum gravity.
Right.
And in the canonical theory, the fermions lives on the node of the spin network.
Sure.
So this is the reason why in the spin form we want the fermions lives on the edges.
And the volume factor is associated with the edge because it's dual to a tetrahedron.
Yeah.
And it's going to become related to the combinatorial volume operator, or the eigenvalues of the volume operator in the canonical picture.
But here, we don't, we are, okay, here we are considering the covariance, only the covariance framework. So we just, yeah?
Okay. And you're worrying about the Lorentz group gauge invariance is going to come later when you couple.
Yeah, then we discuss also the Lorentz invariance later. For the moment, we are in the Euclidean. So then we pass the Lorentz, and then we discuss the Lorentz invariance of the. Actually, our action is Lorentz invariance. So,
just a question about psi depending on the edge. Mm-hmm. So in order to depend on the edge, you need either psi to be a 1 form or a 3 form, right? couple. I mean, the reason why usually you would have something living on the edge is because it's an environment, so it's a one form.
Yeah.
So now, in what sense it's natural to treat the fermions as one form?
Yes. Yes, here in this form, the coupling with the spin form is really natural because at the end we have the same variables of the spin forms.
But are we not? I mean, so this is not really the fermion; it's more like the gravitino, because it means that the fermion carry a one form index.
That's not a uniform. It's not one. If you can rescale the psi field with say some volume, then you have to modify the measure. Usually you have square root of determinant of g.
Yeah, sure. The determinants of the dimension, the usual dimension of mass of the people, they are not half densities. Anyway, they are not the half densities of the.
The thing that is, you know. No, it's just that in the continuum, to associate something to an edge, you need to integrate something along an edge, right?
Yeah.
So psi e in the continuum represents the integral of something along e, along the edge e, right?
Yes. Because in the it's defined as the average in this way. Of this two, one. So this can be done if the second derivative of the field can be neglected. So this is the definition of the variable associated to the edge. So it's defined as the variable, in a sense, in an average of the two variables associated to the edge.
Okay.
But anyway, there are two variants of this model. One that has been studied by Muschin and Carlo, and in the other variant, they consider the field on the vertex. So I like more this variant of the model because for the reason that if we want to have the canonical boundary state of loop quantum gravity plus fermions, we should have fermions on the edge, but you can do it also with fermions on the vertex. So, so this series stops because there can be at most four fermions, two psi and two psi bar per edge. On each edge, the integral is zero, gives zero unless on the edge can leave zero, two, or four fermions. The volume factor cancels with the vertex action. So finally, the partition function is this product or cycles of this amplitude associated to one cycle. So C in between braces is the collection of oriented cycles. Like this picture is a cycle that is a sequence of oriented sequence of edges. And we indicate with this modulo of C the number of minus signs in this integral that comes from this integral. So we simply use this integral, make the explicit calculation, expanding the vertex, the action in this way, and obtain this partition function. And so the amplitude associated with each cycle is really simple, but so now some technical facts.
Actually, the statements you're making. So you're saying you're trading the fermion path integral for an integral over cycles where each cycle gets a weight.
Yes. Yeah, this is the partition function for the. I start from this partition function. Then I expand the exponential of the action this way. I compute explicitly the integral, and at the end I obtain the only effect of the integral is putting this delta. Mm-hmm. So at the end, if you do explicitly the calculation, and it's really easy, you go from this partition function
to this one that is in a sense simpler, and it's expressed as a product over the cycles. Where the cycles are the sequence of edges, and the the amplitude as this form in terms of this. These are sigma Pauli matrices in the direction of the edges, so contracted with the unitary vector in the direction of the edge. So this is the, and here, okay, we have a factor that keeps into account the minus signs in this formula. So
it's, you put the volume factor into the measure g size so that you would cancel the volume.
Yes, yes, yes. Because the problem is that then if you are, okay, it's good that this volume
cancels, because then you don't know how to treat this volume after. So
if this was a classical manifold, mm-hmm. the calculation you would be doing is the one that evaluates the determinant of the square root of the determinant of the fermion operator, the fermion action, and that does know about the metric. So here, when you choose this measure, all the information in the geometry is gone from the evaluation of the fermion path interval. But if you were doing a fermion on a fixed geometry, there would be information that would be kept.
Yeah, but then I have the information about the okay, yes, here the volume, we don't have, the volume cancels, but we choose the measure in a way that we don't have this. Again, the volume comes out. But anyway, we have the information about the metrics, because about the geometry, because then we'll have because in some sense it's encoded in this sigma, because then this sigma matrices will have, then we see that we'll have some holonomies. So then we have the we will have the some notion of geometry. But anyway, here the volume cancels. So
I don't want to keep you too much, but can you, when you, let's go to the next stage and couple this to gravity, and then maybe we'll come back and ask whether it gives a sense in which it agrees with coupling of the fermion, the quantum fermion field to a classical, to a fixed manifold.
Yes. You mean that, because here we do the coupling with spin form, so it's more fun to...
Well, go ahead.
Okay.
I can work on this more sharply if you start.
So, first, this is some technical fact. So,
now we pass to the Lorentzian, and we assume all edges time-like, so all the three cells are space-like. Then consider a group element in SL2C that rotates the unit vector into the vector in the direction of the edge, UE, and where lambda is the vector representation of SL2C. There are some properties. So first recall the property of transformation property of sigma matrices. And then observe that UE contracted with sigma, that is sigma E, transform is equal to this form, so can be written as G dagger G, and we can substitute sigma E in the action with G dagger G, and we obtain simply rewrite the action in terms of this G. So what is the geometrical interpretation? In the discretized theory, a Lorentz frame is determined at each tree cell by the four normal to the tree cell. That is the direction along which the derivative is computed. G, the matrix G, parallel transport the fermion from the fixed reference frame at the center of the four cell to a frame at the center of the tree cell, that is the boundary of the four cell, where the normal to the tree cell is oriented in the time direction. The scalar product that defines the action is taken in this frame, so the construction is Lorentz invariant, since the preferred frame of the scalar product is determined by the normals along which the variation of the fermion is computed. Now we can generalize to curved spacetime. In fact, we can discretize four-dimensional geometry a la Regge with the flat four cells glued through flat three cells, and so the curvature is confined on the two cells. So if we discretize in this way, the holonomy of the spin connection around the two cell can be different from the unity. And so the parallel transport from the source of the edge to the middle of the edge can be different from the parallel transport from the target of the edge to the edge. So simply we have two different holonomies, one the parallel transport from the the source, vertex source to the edge, to the middle of the edge, and one that transports from the target to the middle of the edge. So we have to substitute this amplitude for one cycle with this more general, where we have used this G and G dagger that can be different in principle on the edge. Here, V1, A1, Vn, An is the sequence of vertices and oriented edges crossed by the cycle. And now we can rewrite the amplitude in a simpler way if we define this G star as G minus 1 dagger. So simply we rewrite the amplitude. And this is the form of the partition function. So here, K 1/2 is the character in the fundamental representation of SL2C, and epsilon plus minus according to whether the orientation of the edge and of the cycle matches. So here, but here we still don't have, we still haven't coupled with quantum gravity, but this form is very useful, it's the one that we will use for the coupling, because we will see that for the spin form partition function, we will have exactly the same variable with the same geometrical interpretation. In fact, let's pass to the quantum gravity. So this is the spin form partition amplitude of pure gravity. And this can be complicated. This is the standard formula for the partition amplitude for the new models in the Lorentzian quantum gravity. So, but the things that the key observation that we have to stress is that here there are these matrices that appears that can be identified with the SL2C matrices in the fermion action, because they have exactly the same geometrical interpretation. In fact, the interpretation of these matrices in the partition functions that they parallel transport from the edge to the vertex, or the vertex to the edge, depending on the convention. And also, the interpretation is clear from the asymptotic analysis of the amplitude, because in the saddle point approximation of the asymptotic analysis, we see that the saddle point is exactly on the values of the G that rotates the arbitrary Lorentz frame at the three cell, where the time direction is aligned with the normal of the three cell. So when we move away from the Planck scale, G takes precisely the value needed to yield the fermion action. So this G here in the partition function of pure gravity can be identified with the G of the partition function of the fermions. So our proposal, it's not a demonstration, it's just an ansatz, but our proposal for spin form dynamics plus fermion is this one. So this is the amplitude of pure quantum gravity, and here this other piece is the amplitude of the for fermions, and here we identify these variables. And C are word lines running along the edge of the form that do not overlap more than once. So this is a proposal, but now you can see that it's not written in a local form. So it's not written as a product of vertex amplitude, face amplitude, edge amplitudes. So now our aim is to rewrite this amplitude in an equivalent way, but that is simpler, and explain also something about the interpretation of this variable and what we have done. So in order to write the partition function in a simpler way, that is a product of in a local form, we want to describe the fermionic Fock space. So by Pauli principle, the Fock space includes only antisymmetric states, and there are at most two orthogonal states in the fundamental representation. So at most two particles with all quantum numbers equal. The two particle state must be in the singlet, that is spin zero. And so the Fock space has this structure, and a basis in this space is given by C, where C labeled zero fermion, one fermion with spin up or down, or two fermions in the singlet. States in the Fock space can be conveniently represented as holomorphic verging function of an anti-commuting Grassmann variable, and we can tailor expand the state, and this gives this expansion, where the second term doesn't vanish for the anti-commuting properties of psi, and the series stops for the same reason. So the norm of the state is this one, and the Berezin integral used before is simply a way to write this Fock space and its scalar product. Okay. So this is the pure gravity partition function on a two complex in the spin network basis, written in a local form. So this is a phase amplitude, and this is a vertex amplitude, where the vertex amplitude has this form. And VE is the quantum number, as well as the quantum numbers and the eigenvalues of the basis that diagonalize the volume. And here the label L and N refers to the links and the nodes determined by the intersection of the small three sphere surrounding the vertex with faces F and edges E of the two complex. So it's the spin network that is on the boundary of the vertex, because the edges of the form will intersect this small three sphere in a point that will be a node of the boundary spin network, and the face will cut the sphere on a link. So this is these are the labels of the spin network that bounds the node. So this is the our ansatz for the partition function of gravity plus fermion, where we have simply replaced the vertex amplitude with this one. And we can expand this vertex amplitude and obtain a term where there are no fermions on the boundary, a term where there is a single or an odd number of fermions, and this term vanishing, the vanishing of this term is a sign of the fermion number conservation on the boundary. And then we have another term with two fermions on the boundary, and so on. So we can write explicitly this expansion. So the Berezin integration has the only effect of connecting the free indices of the cell propagators and to cancel the volume factors. So this is the final version of the partition function, which is equivalent to the previous expression. And the dependence of the Lorentz frame of the boundary drops, including the individual group elements. And the local Lorentz transformation leaves the amplitude invariant. So summarizing, the net effect of the fermions is simply to add fermion word lines over the form. The weight of each word line is a contraction of spin connection group elements along the word line, taken in the fundamental representation. The word lines that run over the form carry a J one-half representation and couple to the intertwiner at the edge. They overlap at most twice, and where they overlap, they run in the J equal zero representation. But I have another slide that I think, okay. No, I jumped, sorry, I jumped this slide that was quite important about the fermion Fock space plus the kinematics of quantum gravity, and this is quite important then for the interpretation. So the fermions reside on the nodes of the graph, like in lattice cage theory, so we have to assign a copy of the Fock space to each node. The states of gravity plus fermion live on this space. So the states can be written this way, where a basis is given by a simple generalization of pure gravity spin networks. How we construct this basis? So we choose an intertwiner basis that diagonalizes the volume of the node, where V is the volume eigenvalue. So we replace the spin network basis with this one, where we have added another quantum number that labels the basis C in the Fock space at a node. So at each V-valent node, N bounded by L links with spin J1 and JV, so at each V-valent node, V is an invariant tensor in the tensor product of V representation if C is 0 or 2. And in the tensor product of V plus 1 representation, where the last one is one half, if C is plus or minus, so if there is one fermion with spin up or down. So in this case, the intertwiner couples the spinner to the gravitational magnetic indices. This was as a notation, so here we, with this one, we label the Fock vacuum, so all C are zero. With this notation, all nodes are in the vacuum except for one node that is with N with a one particle in a spin state A, and this is a state with N particle in the nodes N1 and N with spin plus or minus, and this is, for example, a two particle in a singlet. So, okay, this was good for in understanding this. Okay. Yes.
No mass or no mass?
Yeah, the question of mass, so the mass
can be coupled, and it has been done in the
mass?
Yes, so far we have zero mass. Yes.
Why?
We have chiral fermion with zero mass, but okay, but the mass can be coupled, but there are still some of it.
So there are zero. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there zero mass in your Euclidean?
Yeah, no, there's
zero mass, also in the thing you're describing.
Here we have no mass, but we can cover. We can use also fermion with mass. We can do the same things with the mass, but there are some problems. There are still work in progress about the mass. But anyway, in the work of Mucin, Han, and Carlo Lorelli, they consider fermions with mass in a variant, not in this model, in a similar one. But anyway, we would like to understand better the mass and explicitly understand if it is fundamental or can be derived, can be effective.
So it's much better to have masses from the original fundamental theory. But
but you want to know what the dependence of the parameter. Well, the only question I had is, if I understand your model at the end, you're coupling the fermions only to the connection.
Yes.
Okay. For instance, in 2 plus 1, this is not what happens when we couple fermions, right?
Yes.
So it's very surprising because the gravity has 2 degrees of freedom. One is the connection, okay, but the other is the metric. So you expect the fermions to couple to the metric, that is to the B field. And usually this is where the dynamics comes from. So I'm a bit surprised that at the end of the day the metric dependence completely drops out.
Because
this is where let's say the translation of degrees of there are two types of degrees of freedom, right?
Yeah.
There are the spin degree of freedom. The spin degree of freedom coupled to the connection, that's fine. But then there are the translational degrees of freedom, the dx, the fact that it's a phi. Then these ones, where they couple to the B phi.
Yes.
So here, you know, if you have only coupled to the connection, it looks like you have an ultra-local theory, the theory that couples only to the connection, but there's no translational degrees of freedom.
Yeah, this is... okay, we... The tentative model, I don't know, I think perhaps it should be improved to not have to couple... Because here we just have the connection is the same, but... yes, it's only coupled with the connection, not with the metric, but...
On
shell, you don't expect that. You know, in 2 plus 1, what you would have, what you would have is instead of a chi 1/2, you would have a chi theta, which is a sum of all spins of all representation, you know, of the fermion.
Yeah.
But then you know, via a phase factor, which is related to the mass of the fermion, you know, some addition. Well, if you put the mass to zero, it's an even sum. So, you know, because it's a phase that you put. So, in some sense, the fermion, you know, usually what you expect is that it's going to couple to the connection in that manner, maybe. But then the chi you put, you know, well, we expect that the chi you put is some kind of coherent state, which knows about all of spins.
All spins, yeah. Because here, it is the sum over spin, but this decouples from... The only in a sense coupling is in the intertwiners where you have the lines of the gravitational fields, and the intertwiner is between the J and this 1/2 representation, because on the boundary on the boundary you have the that the intertwiner couples the spin of the coming what's coming from the node to this leg that has spin 1/2. So, but in the path integral, then the sum of the spins drops.
Is that related to, just to go back? So in the go back to the one more. So the spin, so in this Fock space, the spins, when you have one fermion on a node, it does couple to the intertwiner on the node, so it is coupled to the volume and the metric. But then this is the same issue that you choose the measure factor, so that when you compute the partition function, the dependence goes away.
Yeah.
But, so I think that's what's at stake, but a question is, I mean, there are other observables besides the partition function. And if you, say, couple to some fermion bilinear and want to compute its expectation value, the cancellation is not going to be complete of the volume factors.
Mm-hmm. And so, we want to compute some observables. The main things that is still missing is the semi-classical limit of these things, because in general, when you want to compute observables, then you have to do the semi-classical limit.
Right, so that's what I was alluding to before. So a good check as to whether the issue raised, that Laurent is raising, you know, whether you got those things correct or not, is to just go back to flat space, or you know, pick a spin form that represents flat space time, and compute your determinant, and the fermion determinant should coincide to some approximation with it.
Yeah, we want to do that. Yeah.
But
or you could start from the end. I mean, no matter what is the derivation, the reason you need spin dependence, let's say, in the flat space is that when you vary with respect to the spin, you get the curvature. And the curvature, the source of curvature, is the fermion. So the fermion do not couple the spin, they do not source the curvature. So they're not part of the energy momentum tensor. That's another way to say that. So what you want is maybe to put that so that whatever coupling to curvature you get is the one. There's the derivation, but there's also the end result.
Just one more question, because I think you said it, but I missed it. In what sense are these spinners chiral? In the decomposition of SL2C into left-hand and right-hand, do they couple only to the left-hand part of the connection?
The connection, but here we consider just one component, one of the
two.
Yes, they couple to one left hand and the right hand, so we consider just one.
But not both.
I think that the right hand couples with the. So we have I think they're both, because the SL2C connection couples both with right-handed and left-handed. Yes, couples with both.
But you start with two component spinners.
Yes.
So in the continuum formulation, the two component spinner couples only to the left-handed part of SL2C, it's only to the. It's easy to say in the Euclidean case. In the Euclidean case, it couples only to the self-dual or the anti-self-dual part of the connection.
Yeah, but here we don't split the connection into left-handed and right-handed. Here, in a sense, the connection is regularized as enolonomy, and then it's discretized. So I don't see here where is the right-hand. Okay, it can be that, but I can see clearly here if they couple to only to one or to both, because it's not explicit.
But the meaning of a chiral spinner is that it couples just to one. In a continuum,
right?
And if this is something you'd really like to get right, because you would like it to have chiral symmetry, that is where you multiply the left and right piece by different phases.
Yeah, you're right. You should see it basically, because
I think he's right.
Yeah.
We never thought about this. You're right, it's like that. But we didn't write the paper in the beginning. It's all right, sir. But maybe.
Lorenzian says so, it takes one more step to say.
Yeah, but only to the self-dual. Yeah, so left spinners couple only to the left part of the connection.
It would be nice to show that explicitly. Because then a mass term is impossible. Then there's genuinely kind of.
You're right, it's difficult to see that. You should see. Yeah, also in the right.
Okay, this is just one slide about Young-Mills fields. So if the coupling with fermion was tentative, the coupling with Young-Mills field is more tentative anymore. So it's just an hint. So how we can couple Young-Mills after fermion. So if fermion live in a fundamental representation of the compact group G, the theory is invariant under global G transformation. And to make it invariant under local gauge transformation, introduce U, that's an element of G, associated with wedge. The wedge is the couple vertex edge. And consider this action, so simply we replace G with an element of a bigger group. Now spring forms carry a representation of SL2C and the intertwiners of the nodes
have possible extra legs representing fermion in an anti-symmetric product of the fundamental representation of SL2C times G. So we simply generalize the group to a bigger group. And the dynamics, the Young-Mills action can be generated by the one-loop relative correction in the fermion action in the Young-Mills field suggested by Zeldovich. So this is proposal for the partition function. Simply we have this element of the bigger group, but we haven't seen how this mechanism of generation of the dynamics could work. In fact, this is an open issue, just a hint how we can go on and couple Young-Mills fields. So finally, concluding, we have defined a tentative quantum theory of gravity, fermions, and Young-Mills fields with the following strategy. First, a spin form amplitude can be seen as a definition of the gravitational path integral, which keeps into account the quantization of geometry. Second, we have found a discretization of the fermion action, which remains valid on the curved space-time, and which is expressed in terms of the same variables that appear in the spin form amplitudes. Third, this calculation is not a derivation or a quantization, but rather it's an heuristic hint, yielding an ansatz for the definition of the coupled gravity fermion theory. The theory appears to have the correct degrees of freedom and the proper symmetries, like CPT theorem proved by Hahn and Rovelli. A fermion is essentially an extra phase of spin one half, which is non-local over the two complex. At fixed time, it can be seen as a non-local loop that disappears outside space-time to reappear far away, like a Weyl-Schmoring-Kerr-Newman fermion. So outlooks, there are many, many outlooks, so here are just some of them. First, to understand the mechanism of the generation of Young-Mills kinetic term by the fermion loops, that is completely unclear. Second, the mass term has been included in a variation of the model by Hahn and Rovelli, but there are still many issues. Is it fundamental, can be obtained in an effective way, or so on? And the semi-classic analysis is still missing. Can we obtain in the semi-classical limit the classical action of the system gravity plus fermions? And the derivation of the model is very tentative. Is there a more rigorous derivation or can make the derivation better? Because this is, for example, starting from, I don't know, a classical action of gravity plus fermions and derive the model from the classical theory. So, okay, we don't know, we have to still some work, lot of work to do. Thanks.
So, yeah, if you have any questions, you can ask time for questions.
Well, okay. It's very nice. Let me push you on one point. Zeldovich had a friend who was Sakharov, and Sakharov said you could also get the gravity part of the action from the one loop of the fermion, so by the same philosophy. So why not just cross out the whole part of the spin foam action and just have a fermion action?
So you mean starting just from the gravitational action?
No, and the other way around. Cross out the first line.
Ah. So starting.
And this really brings to heart the issue that Baran is raising. But if you go back to one of your two line.
Like this. One or
the one downstairs. So just stop. Back.
Where? Here?
No. The summary slide. This one. Yes.
Ah, okay. Proposal.
So just cross out the factor in parentheses on the right hand side of the first line, which is the usual new vertex. Just cross it out and get that from quantum corrections.
Okay. Yes.
But that, at any rate, would have been Sakharov's philosophy.
Yes. It should be. Yes, we should understand how can fermion loops here generate, because it is not it's not perturbative. So I understand that in the perturbative theory, for example, in how terms can be generated by using the perturbative approach, adding counter terms. So, for example, to cancel some counter terms, you have to add the piece that is exactly the one that you want. So, indeed, it's quite clear in the perturbative context. But here, okay, there are still some fundamental issue to understand how you can generate in the speed form.
Well, in particular, if you take that point of view, it appears that the action doesn't know at all about the metric variables, but only knows it doesn't know about the J's, but only and the intertwiners, but only knows about the connection.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah, the thing you know to apply Zakharov's advantage is that not only you integrate the fermion, but you use locality. That is, then you make a derivative expansion
yeah.
of your stuff. So it's only at that point that you really get gravity. Whereas here, in a non-local model, then when you integrate the fermion, what you're going to get is at best some kind of non-local action.
But it's completely non-local.
Yeah, completely non-local. So it's not going to be a local speed form. Which is maybe what you should look for. That's going to be different.
And if I can ask a last question. Mm-hmm. People have tried to put chirofermions on a lattice in Yang-Mills lattice gauge theory. And it doesn't work. At least it doesn't work in any simple way because the fermions double.
Yeah, no, but here we don't have this problem because we have a random lattice. We don't have a fixed lattice because this problem arises there because in some sense it's related to the fact that you have a fixed lattice. If you don't have a fixed lattice, because then in the philosophy of spin form you should have some over all the possible refinements.
No, but then there's a paradox. If you believe that the fermions don't double because you have a dynamical lattice, okay, then turn off gravity. Go to the point where you couple to Yang-Mills fields.
Yes.
Turn off gravity. And then you have a path integral which makes sense for and choose a representation of the gauge group. The firm has to be in a representation of the gauge group which is anomalous in the Yang-Mills quantum theory.
Mm-hmm.
And then the claim that you'll be led to make is that you have a consistent quantization of a gauge theory coupled to a chiral fermion which is inconsistent in the standard framework because of a chiral anomaly, and the claim that you seem to be making is that having a dynamical lattice or introducing gravity lifts the chiral anomaly.
Yeah, but if you switch off gravity,
But let me just continue. There's no evidence perturbatively that coupling to gravity helps you with chiral with gauge theories with chiral anomaly. Because having a chiral anomaly is a fatal flaw of a gauge theory.
And so it
seems to me, and the same argument was made in lattice gauge theory, and then the discovery that the chiral fermions double removed the paradox. So either chiral fermions really do double, mm-hmm. in which case you can't put the standard model in a coupling to a spin foam model. Just like you can't put the standard model on a lattice gauge theory, okay? Or you should see some sign of the chiral anomaly, chiral gauge anomaly, even in the spin foam model. Something inconsistent should happen if you couple two representations of the gauge theory which are anomalous perturbatively. And my hope is that that's what happens.
The lattice is dynamic because here the main difference with lattice gauge theory is that the lattice is dynamic.
Yeah, but what I'm suggesting is that the chiral anomaly should be stronger than the dynamical lattice, and there should be still a way to see that some choices of representations for coupling chiral fermions to Yang-Mills theories don't make sense.
Yeah, I understand. Yes, okay. This is fine. Yes, yeah,
okay,
yeah, understand your
life. Well, I don't know if I'm right, but it seems to me it would be very good to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. You have to work on that.
Any more questions? Let's thank Elena.